Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show, where international author, speaker, teacher, and philosopher, Dr. John DeMartini shares with you exactly how to break through whatever is holding you back from your best life. Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show. This is episode number 2, where John is going to be focusing specifically on helping you develop and grow inspired relationships, where we delve into the art of communication. We look at love and soulmates, marriage, divorce. We really look at the entire spectrum of relationships, and more importantly, how you can begin to master and empower your relationships so you can get what you want, but also help others get what they want at the same time. So if you've been asking yourself, is there such thing as a happily ever after, and can I transcend all this challenge that I might be going through with my partner right now to come out with a successful relationship, then this is the exact episode that you want to be listening to. For those of you who are brand new to Dr. DeMartini's material, he is a human behavioral specialist with studies in over 290 different disciplines, or ologies as John calls them. And over the course of a 45 plus year career, John has gone from 17 and nearly dying in the back of a tent with strychnine poisoning to becoming a master of his life and then allowing others to see that same divine beauty in the world. This podcast is going to be an exploration of some of his theories and thoughts and inspirations, so you can draw from that and implement them into your own life. Each episode will feature a different series. They go for varying lengths depending on what the teachings are that John wants to share with you. And over the course of the next few weeks, months, and years, you're going to learn the intimate details of exactly how you can begin to master your life. If you would like to take the very first action from this podcast, John recommends to head over to drdemartini.com, where not only will you find all of John's materials in one central location, but you will be able to do the values determination process, which is a central pillar of all of John's teaching. So enjoy the episode, and we look forward to speaking to you very soon.
Should we jump right in?
That's fine for me. Great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Right. So the one we've got here, what do you think defines, I think this really sums up, a good or great relationship versus one that some people may label bad, unhealthy, or destructive relationship? How do we define those?
I think the definition is based on the individual with an individual set of values. Because anytime you have something in your life that supports your values, you tend to label it good. And anytime you have things that challenge your values, you tend to label it bad. Those are moral languages. And great relationship is one that has a magnitude, but good and evil kind of relationship, or good or bad relationships, are kind of moralizing. And I don't even strive for good or bad relationships. I don't like to label them that way. I just like to say something that is fulfilling or less fulfilling. That's the language I like to use. But anything that can help you fulfill what is most meaningful, most valuable, what's most inspiring to you in a relationship, you're going to label it as fulfilling. Fulfillment means filling full the mind of that which is it's striving to fulfill, trying to achieve. One that is not fulfilling is obviously going to be sometimes labeled the bad one, but it's just unfulfilling. And we have kind of what I call a tolerance zone in relationship. If it's too similar to us and it's too mundane, etc., and it gets boring, it doesn't work for us. If it's too challenging, it just burns us out. That's all I can say. Too much support, boring. Too much challenge, burnout. Finding a nice balance of these two sides of what makes a fulfilling relationship. We have this tolerance zone that we can sustain a relationship in. And too much challenge, we start to think this isn't working for me. Too much boringness isn't working for me. You got to have a balance of that. In fact, the ancient Greeks said that really a healthy relationship has a balance of support and challenge, a balance of similarities and differences. So a fulfilling relationship, a healthy relationship, or a wellness-oriented relationship, the one that won't kill you, if you will, is going to be one that you feel you're getting enough support and enough challenge to keep yourself in a bantering dynamic with the person. and you feel like you're moving forward and growing. We grow most when we have a balance of those two. And so a relationship that provides that, it kind of, if we get cocky, it brings us, kind of humbles us. If we get down, it lifts us up. It keeps us centered. It helps us become authentic. And that's ultimately, we want to be loved and appreciated for who we are. We want to be authentic. We want to fulfill what's most meaningful to us. And a fulfilling relationship is one that is able to help us do that.
Fantastic. And I can, from my own life, say, you know, I've always thought where things were going bad, and I look back years later, I realize, oh, you know what, thank you for doing that, because had you not confronted me in that way, I would have just carried on doing X, Y, and Z. So the conflict actually caused us both to grow. And as a result, I mean, we both are tremendously happy. So, and speaking of conflict, the next question, what are the top things that create conflict in a relationship? And why do we have conflict in a relationship?
Well, I don't know of a relationship. I've never met a relationship that can look me straight in the eye, particularly two people in a relationship, that can look me straight in the eye and say, I've never had a conflict. I think that's unrealistic, because no two people are exactly the same, and no two people have the same exact set of values. And there's going to be times when we're puffed up and we think our values are more important than theirs, and they're going to do the same sometimes, and we're going to have conflicts at times. That's, you know, you grow most at the border of comfort and uncomfort. Cooperation and conflict, if you will, or competitiveness, and that's part of the game. But to keep it within a zone that's tolerable, as I've said earlier, it's learning how to have realistic expectations. Many conflicts come from unrealistic expectations and fantasies. So let me address what that is. Anytime you expect them to live in your values, you're going to set yourself up for expectations that are not going to be real. Anytime you expect them to be one-sided, I'd like to take a tangent on that. In the Breakthrough Experience program that I do, you know, pretty well every week, I've done 1,111 times. That's how many times I've done it. I go up to somebody in the seminar at one point and said, you're always mean, you're never nice. You're always cruel, you're never kind. You're always negative, you're never positive. You're always taking, you're never giving. You're always stingy, you're never generous. You're always wrathful, you're never peaceful. And I said, do you believe me that way? Do you believe that's true? And they go, no. I said, but you're always kind. You're never cruel. You're always nice. You're never mean. You're always positive. You're never negative. You're always giving. You're never taking. You're always peaceful. You're never wrathful. Do you believe that's true? I go, no. I said, would you believe that sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, sometimes you're giving, sometimes you're taking? Would you believe that? And I go, yes. We have a built-in thermostat, an intuitive feedback system to our own consciousness to let us know we have both sides. Because we have a set of values, and when our values are perceived as being supported, we can be pretty nice. We're a pussycat. But when our values are challenged, we can become a tiger. And we have both. And so to expect somebody to be one-sided is a fantasy. And that can lead to a lot of conflict. The second one is for them to live in your values. And I've seen this many times. I had a woman in the Breakthrough Experience recently that was punishing her husband because she was expecting him to read her mind. And that's quite an expectation. But she was expecting him to read her mind. You should just know what I want, and you should be thinking about that, and I shouldn't have to tell you. And I was saying that that's a little bit like, you know, a psychic reading or something like that. You're guessing there. And anyway, she had an unrealistic expectation, and we had to calm it down in the Breakthrough Experience and reestablish a reality check for their relationship. And we were able to do that. We also helped to realize where she was not paying attention and people were having that expectation on her. And so she had to own where she's doing that. But the fantasy of expecting a one-sided person, the fantasy of expecting them to live outside their values and in your values. I had a woman that came in, and I've also had men and women, it goes both ways, that came to me and said, my husband, he's lazy. He's just not driven. He's not ambitious. He won't bring money. I have to go to work. I have to pay for everything. It's frustrating. And I said, just out of curiosity, did you date a guy that was extremely wealthy and driven financially? And did you burn out on that? And said, well, yeah, my previous man was a workaholic, and I dumped him for that. I couldn't handle that. And I said, well, now you went to the other extreme. Now you got a guy that's not ambitious. Now you're taken care of like a son. I said, you might want to find somebody that's more of a balance between those two extremes. He said, well, you're expecting him now to be driven, but also be there for you. And you have to make sure you have realistic expectations, and you want to make sure that you know what the person's values are if you're going to be in a relationship. Because if you don't know what they are, you're going to put all kind of false expectations on them. So a lot of conflicts come from fantasies, one-sided expectations, fantasies to read your mind, fantasies to live in your values, fantasies to live outside their values. All these unrealistic expectations lead to what I call the ABCDEFGHs of negativity, which you'll have anger and aggression towards them. You'll want to blame them, even though they haven't done anything except not live in your values, your unrealistic expectation. You'll want to feel that they betrayed you. They didn't betray you. You betrayed you with an unrealistic expectation. You criticize them. You challenge them. You feel despaired and distraught, and you want to exit and escape the relationship. You're frustrated, and it's feeling futile, and you're grouchy, and you're grieving over the loss of the fantasy that you once thought you were going to get. And you have hatred, and you're hurt. And these are ABCDEFGHs of negativity are common for unrealistic expectations. So these are the sources of the conflict. And those conflicts can be overwhelming. If they're within a certain tolerance zone, we can adapt to them. But if not, they become overwhelming, and we start to put up walls. And sometimes those walls, if we don't have the tools, which I'm going to address in this program, if you don't have the tools to dissolve those, they can accumulate. And you shut down your intimacy and shut down your communication. And this can start breaking down the relationship.
So you mentioned there, John, which is key, is obviously values in a relationship. So how could you communicate to the other person in their values to avoid that conflict?
Well, for those who've been on my webinars before, I've mentioned values. Those who have not, I'm going to take a moment to encourage you to go to my website and to go up on the menu and go to where it says determine your values. There's a 13 questionnaire step-by-step process that I would encourage you and whoever you're in a relationship with. Now, that may not be limited to people of intimacy. It could be your children. It could be your parents. It could be your sister. Anybody you're in a relationship with, this is applicable, but particularly for the spouse or partner. So I would go in there and determine the values. It's a 13-step questionnaire to help you determine what is really valuable to them. How do they fill their space? What is it that they spend their time on spontaneously? What is it that energizes them? Where do they spend their money? Where are they most organized? Where are they most spontaneously disciplined and reliable, and they just do things without having to be reminded? What is it that they are thinking about how they want their life that shows evidence coming true? What are they visualizing and what are they affirming about how they want their life to be that shows evidence coming true? What is it that they want to converse with other people about most, what they want to talk about most? What is the most common conversation that they want to involve themselves with? What is it that inspires them? What is it that the three top goals and persistent goals that they have in their life that they want to go and pursue and they're coming true? And the last one is, what is it they love learning about? Because whatever those indicators are, those are objective indicators to help us understand what's really valuable to them. I would recommend that you and your partner, or whoever you're going to do this exercise with, to sit down for literally two together, sit down and go through this process and actually be as honest and integral as you can with each other, giving feedback, and get as honest as you can to narrow down what the values are. Because whatever's highest on your value is what you're spontaneously inspired to be and do and have. And your identity revolves around the highest value. So identifying the top three are the most important. And then what I would do, and this is an exercise you can do while you're waiting for food at a restaurant or while you're sitting in the kitchen or sitting and just talking or whatever, get a piece of paper out, both of you, or get your little cell phones out or a computer out and define the top three values and make sure they're updated. And I recommend this is done every quarter. This exercise is a quarterly exercise to keep communicating more effectively. Identify the top three values. Identify the top three values by after doing that exercise. And then asking a simple question. How specifically is their top value, and their top three values particularly, but the top value, how specifically is it helping you fulfill your top three? If you can see and answer that question 30 or 40 times and just literally see the connections of what they're dedicated to and how it's serving you, you're going to start to appreciate them for who they are. And if you can't see how what they're dedicated to is serving you, you're going to want to look down on them. You're going to want to fix them. You're going to want to change them. And people want to be loved for who they are, not for who you want them to be, not the fantasy you're expecting, not the unrealistic expectation that you're projecting. So you want to make sure that you find out how what they're dedicated to, what's inspiring to them, what's most important in life is serving you. Because if not, they're not, you're going to kind of want to fix them. And then do the opposite. Go and ask how specifically is your top three values, how specifically is it helping them fulfill their top three values? And going through that exercise and answer that 30, 40, 50, 60 times, as many times as you can, the more connections you make between each other's top values, the more you will have a dialogue instead of an alternating monologue where you're speaking, they're not listening. They're speaking, you're not listening. And you're both sitting down thinking about what you're going to say to change and retaliate because you're not appreciating each other. People want to be appreciated and loved for who they are. And who they are is their top values, particularly the top one. And that's their identity revolves around. And if you are expecting them to live in your values and they're expecting you to live in their values, you got to checkmate. It's not going to go anywhere. You're going to keep fighting all the time. And this is unnecessary. And this breeds the conflict. It's excessive conflict. You're going to have some conflict, but not excessive conflict. And in the process of taking the time to do that exercise, go and do the value determination process online. I promise you that will be helpful. Then go and make the links. In my book, The Heart of Love, I describe how to do some of that. But in the breakthrough experience, I actually help you do it. You're actually going through and doing that exercise in the breakthrough experience. That's why I tell people, come to the breakthrough experience, because it helps them in their relationship. And I don't know of anything more powerful than the Demartini method and that value linking process as far as reestablishing a love and an intimacy in the relationship. A very powerful exercise. So find out what your top three values are, find out what their top three values, and link them. And when you can see how what they're dedicated to serving you, and you can see how what you're dedicated to serving them, and they can too, your relationship goes to a new level because you have now a whole lot to appreciate, respect, and you'll find yourself bantering and keep each other in authentic states instead of sitting there looking down on them and trying to fix them and them trying to fix you, and you're getting into conflict. It's completely a predictable and understandable mechanism because people aren't appreciating each other's their values. They're setting unrealistic expectations and fantasies on people.
And that's so amazing that you can actually take the time to get to know your partner's values and in turn see how them pursuing and honoring their own values supports you in your own values, because now you've created those linkages. I mean, that's exceptionally powerful. But you did also say that having unrealistic expectations is a form of conflict. But I mean, it is a natural state for us to have expectations of our partners. So how do you draw the balance, or how do we handle our expectations for them becoming not so excessive, but maybe more realistic expectations on a partnership?
Well, if you find out after the last five relationships, you keep having the same scenario occurring, you might want to look at yourself. You keep seeing patterns in your behavior and patterns in your relationship. I got to share a funny one. I had a lovely lady that used to work for me that had an alcoholic father. She was a drinker, and she married five Mikes who were alcoholic. Five Mikes, and was headed for the sixth one. Now, you tell me if that's not a pattern. That was quite amazing. She was a character, but she kept attracting the issues that she had never resolved dealing with her dad. And she kept having it in her. Because anything that you can't say thank you for in life is your baggage. And anything that's anytime you have a split between your conscious and unconscious, and you store it in the subconscious mind, and it causes emotional reactions and activates our amygdala and makes us want to seek for a one-sided pleasure and want to avoid a pain. And the truth is, a relationship is going to give you pleasure and pain. It's going to be support and challenge. So anytime you're not living by your own highest values and feeling you can fulfill your highest values in the relationship, you go into the amygdala, and then you tend to want to look for a one-sided scenario, and you're setting yourself up for destroying your relationship. And you're now going to fight like animals in a pen. The gladiator effect, I call it.
Thank you, John. You also said important to have shared interests in relationships. So a lot of people, you know, we want to be with someone who has a shared interest with us in certain areas. Is that always, is it okay to be able to do things that are separate in a relationship that you don't always see eye to eye on, or that you have different interests or completely different interests? Is that okay in a relationship?
Well, I think Cabron said it, let there be some space in our togetherness. The willow and the oak don't grow in each other's shadows, kind of thing. you every human being has their own hierarchy of values. Imagine there, like, here's a ladder of values, and here's a ladder of values for you and that your partner. And no two people have the same set of values. And what's interesting, you typically attract in a mate that which complements. Just like the DNA has a male and female strand, and they are actually in reverse complementations. They're literally pointing in two different directions, and they're complete complementary opposites. And our genetic code is set up that way, and our life does that same thing. So you pretty well can guess that you're going to find somebody in the planet that you can delegate lower priority things to, and they're going to find you to delegate lower priority stuff to them. You can have a reverse kind of a complementation. But you can have some areas that are shared and some that are different. In fact, the ancient Greeks said that if you see more similarities than differences, you have infatuation. You know, when you're infatuated, you go, oh my God, we have the same number of eyes, same number of ribs, same number of teeth, same number of arms and legs. We are soulmates. And when you're resentful, you see the differences. We don't have anything in common. We're going in two different directions. We don't have any, you know, we want two different things. We don't see eye to eye. But when you have a balance of similarities and differences, you have love. And this has been shown and written about for centuries. It's nothing new. And so, but people, when they're living in their amygdala and they're not living by their highest values, they keep wanting a one-sided world. They want to go seek the prey, not the predator. They want to consume them with a passion instead of embrace them with a mission. So you can't expect them to have exactly the same value system and share everything the like. In fact, if you imagine that here's a person that's a circle and here's another person with a circle, if you have two people completely unrelated, no sharing of values whatsoever, you have another. You don't have any relationship at all. There's nothing to connect on. If you have them exactly the same, you have a smother. And a smother eventually leads to another, and another leads to a smother. But if you have what they call the vesica Pisces, where the center of one circle is the circumference of the other circle and vice versa, you have an overlapping vesica Pisces, which are two triangles sitting in between the two circles. And you have one circle pointing up with a mission, and you got another person with a mission, and you have an overlapping area that's common. And that's where you connect. That's where you have kind of a covalent sharing of relationships there, not in all aspects. That would be boring. If any two people are two of the same, that's a boring relationship. If they're two completely different, that's burnout. But finding a balance between those two is a loving relationship. So you don't want it completely. You know, I have fantasy people come to me in the breakthrough experience. They say, oh, you know, I finally got a guy. We have everything in common. We always want to do exactly the same thing and everything else. I said, how long have you been seeing him? Oh, 2 weeks now. I said, give a little time. You might find that a little temporary and delusive. I said that because a real relationship will emerge over time. You know, you'll find out that anybody can go through an infatuation period for weeks or maybe a few months, but eventually the other side surfaces. All repressions eventually explode into expressions. So people want to, the best thing to do is to know what their values are and know what they're dedicated to and what their life spontaneously does when they're not with you. That gives you an idea of what they're about. And if you can't love that, you're not loving them. You're going to try to fix them into somebody you think they're going to be because you have a fantasy. And that's your lesson, not to project a fantasy on somebody, but to honor them for who they are. If you can do that by doing the linking of values, you just save yourself a lot of aggravation. But no two people are going to have exactly overlapping values. Not going to happen. And even identical twins don't even have that. So you're not going to find that. And it's an unrealistic expectation to do that. So you're going to have some things that are common. I always say that even with the economic arrangement, you know, and when some people are in that, and I advise them in the breakthrough experience to have your account, the other person has their account, and then they have a common account that, on things you both agree for. And you put that together and you build a life together, but you also have your independence and you need that. There's a law called the law of the one and the many. And if you try to make everything one, you have forces of nature trying to break it into many. If you try to make everything opposites and completely nothing to do with each other, you'll have a yearning to want to go find the one. And then so there's a balance to it. And that's that vesica Pisces structure that's in sacred geometry, the way the universe was created.
That's so beautiful. And I've been doing a lot of research on that vesica Pisces, and it's amazing how many correlations you can bring into a relationship, especially in the beginning phases. And I think it leads us into our next question. You know, we live in an overly stimulated Hollywood I like to call the popcorn culture of romantic comedies, etc. So is there a happily ever after or a soulmate, in your opinion, Dr. DeMartini?
Well, I've never met a person that can look me in the eye and say I'm happy. I find that when I ask people in the breakthrough experience, I mean, I've asked thousands of people, how many of you have moments of happiness and moments of sadness and moments of cooperation, moments of competition and peace and war and things like that? When they're really honest, they have both. So I gave up 33 years ago when I did my research on the illusions of trying to be positive all the time and be happy all the time. I gave it up. Those are the most sad people I've ever met are people that are trying to live happy all the time. So I think that's foolish. I think that's childish. And it's animalistic, striving for, you know, prey without predator kind of life. And I don't promote that. I think if you're still living in a fantasy that you're supposed to be happy all the time, in a passionate, hedonistic way, you're delusional. Now, if you're going to take a more of an Aristotelian construct of an eudaimonic happiness, which is a well-being and a wholeness, then that's different. But that's including what most people consider happy and sad, the support and the challenge together. And when you can do that and you can have fulfillment, then that's possible. But trying to be happy ever after in the classical kind of childish behavior manner, where you're giggling all the time, I think that's unrealistic. You're going to have, you know, happy and sad. You're going to have pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow. All polarizations will be there, and they're necessary. And in fact, in the breakthrough experience, I can actually show people and I prove to people that they're simultaneous. But you're conscious of one and unconscious of the other. Or conscious the other one and unconscious the first one. And whenever you have those splits, you got built-in judgments, and it's just a matter of time before the unconscious that's being repressed surfaces, and you have to face the other side. So I think it's wiser to embrace both sides of the individual. You know, we don't have to get rid of half of ourselves to love ourselves, and we don't need to get rid of half of them to love them. If you're trying to get rid of half of them, it's futile. You're going to find out that every human being has every trait, and they're going to be surfacing all those traits. And if you're looking for a mate, you're going to need to look for both traits, the things you like and dislike. In fact, I in the breakthrough experience, I have this fun little period when people are having to own the traits of people. I say, you know, when you first meet this guy, this woman meets this guy and go, oh, he's so intelligent. He's so brilliant, everything else. And then weeks go by and you find out, well, he knows it all. He's argumentative. You know, he always thinks he's right. He talks down to me because he thinks he's more intelligent. And the very thing that I once admired is now my peccadillo that drives me batty. And then you see the guy that goes, oh, she's so hot. She has such a beautiful body. I mean, she's amazing. She's just tantalizing. And then weeks go by and you go, yeah, she takes forever to get ready. And she's focused on herself and we're making love. She notices herself. She didn't look at me. Everybody else is looking at her. And I'm always in competition with that. And the very thing that you once admired is also the very thing that drives you nuts. So you are going to find that every trait has both sides, things you like and dislike, and so does every human being. And so that's why you have to embrace both sides of the person. That's why you want to see how whatever their values are, how it serves you, including those two sides. If you can't love, that's what the breakthrough experience is for, and that's what the DeMartini method's about, to learning how to take the both sides of the person, find out how they're helping you fulfill your highest values so you can appreciate the whole person. And when you appreciate people for who they are, they turn into who you love.
That's amazing. And I really, in my own life, I can see that happening. Will you accept the person for who they are and stop trying to push? You know, I've been an entrepreneur for 16 years and married for 10. So, you know, it's been an interesting dynamic to walk that path. But one of the things that a lot of people talk about in relationship is charisma and as the ultimate attractor in social circles. Is that something you're born with? Is something you can develop? For those of us that don't have it, I sometimes wonder if I do or don't. But is that something that you can develop, or the rest of us just sort of damned to not have any charisma?
Well, the research that I've seen on charisma was different than my original idea, what I thought charisma was. I thought charisma was an inherent, you might say, trait that an individual has, but I found out that charisma has nothing to do with an individual. It has everything to do with how the person perceives the individual. So in other words, if I'm doing so, I can have 10 people in a room with all a different set of values, and I can be doing something or saying something that six of them will think, man, he's charismatic. The other four will think, he's boring. And not, because if I'm fulfilling the person's values, they tend to think of you as charismatic and magnetic. But if I'm not fulfilling that person's values, they don't think that. They don't label me charismatic. So it's not so much my behavior as much as how well I communicate in people's values. If I'm standing up in an audience, this morning I did a presentation to about 1,000 people, and when I was looking for the feedback and engagement, it was fluctuating. Based on as I was talking, I could see people checking in and checking out, and I could see their physiology and language, or their body language, was changing as I was going through different areas and topics of my topic, or subtopics. And so they would have labeled me variously throughout that time, charismatic, non-charismatic, as I was going through my topics. So it's not so much an inherent behavior, it's how well they are communicated. Because you could take, I know you can laugh at this, but you could take Donald Trump and you could put him in certain settings and he's going to be perceived as charismatic to some, but to a whole lot of people, they would not see him charismatic at all. So it all depends on the group that you're in front of and the individual that you're in front of. So I don't think of it as so much the trait you have as much as the skill that you can develop about caring about another individual and the ability to communicate in a way that meets their needs. And, you know, when I was talking on sales this morning, and selling in outside relationship is the same as caring inside relationship. Caring is caring enough to find out what's valuable to the person and doing what you can to help them fulfill their life. And when they do, they're going to see you as a magnetic, charismatic individual. Now, some people think charismatic is somebody that's hyper and excited and, you know, this kind of thing. Not necessarily. I've seen people that are very focused, very quiet, but incredible charismatic. When they say something, it's extremely meaningful and it touches people's lives, and they have charisma because of it, and they have magnetism because of it. So it's about the ability to communicate in people's values and fulfill people's values that draw and give them the title charisma.
Wow, that's interesting. So charisma is not less about you than it's actually about other people and understanding where they're from and the values.
It's about you caring about them enough to communicate in their values. Because when I do that effectively as a speaker, I'll get that feedback. That was amazing. That was charismatic. And if I'm not meeting their needs, I just go, oh. So I'm not a charismatic person at all times. I'm charismatic when I'm able to care enough to communicate more effectively in people's values.
And leading from charisma, John, when we look at intimate relationships and we take it a step further, what would you say makes a person sexually attractive? Is it something that we're born with, or is it something that you can develop? And I think this is sort of outside the context of big muscles and a good tan. Is it different for men and for women? Or what would you say about that?
Well, first of all, we have what is called search images, and I'm gonna have some fun with this one, so hang in there. From the time you're conceived as a sperm and an egg, from the sexual experience that you were privy to at a very beginning age, before you were even aware you were aware, from that point on, as you undergo embryonic development and gestation, you're having events go on in that development that are causing you what you perceive to be supportive or challenging. You can see this even in ultrasounds. And that fetus and embryo is actually responding and seeing that and storing that in its awareness. And some people have different ways of describing that, because sometimes the brain is developed by the third week and we're already having responses and we're starting to move things and within a number of weeks later. And we're literally accumulating things that we like and dislike right from the beginning. Sounds, smells, things like that are actually things that our parents are going through. And by the time we're born, we already have a search image and an anti-search image that we're attracted to and repelled. We already have a value system. We used to be thought to be born with blank slates, tabula rasa, they call it. But now we understand we have a value system. And then as we go from birth all the way through to our teens, et cetera, and our hormones are now kicking in to make us look for possibly a mate. We've created what is called a search image and an anti-search image. Things that support our values are all accumulated together, and that's what we're drawn to. Like an animal, we're drawn to that which is prey that we like to eat and consume. And we're also trying to avoid things that are predator-like to us, that have been challenged to us. So our animal nature is looking for the mate and is trying to avoid that which has been challenging and is trying to seek that which is supportive. But we also have a reasoning part of our brain, the forebrain. not our animal part, but our angelic part. And that's the one that's about love and about intuition and about reason and about objectivity and being able to embrace both sides of life. And some people never mature enough to actually use that part of the brain. They're always trying to avoid pain and seek pleasure, and they're trying to be happy all the time and trying to find peace and relationship and constantly attracting conflicts. But you have a search image and an anti-search image. And in a relationship, you're searching for that, and you're also using your objective reason. Now, whether we like it or not, we're looking for a mate that's empowered in seven areas of life. We're looking for somebody that's physically fit, that has certain reproductive strategy-looking behaviors and forms that have been proven to stand the test of time. So you see a woman that's voluptuous, you see a man that's strong. These are tall, dark, and handsome, and voluptuous, and well-proportioned. These are the classic. But you also are looking for, are they ambitious? Are they intelligent? Do they have resources and access to resources? Do they want to be with you, and are they willing to have offspring possibly with you? Are they socially connected, and can they get along with the people you interact with? Are they physically fit, health-wise? And are they inspired by something? You're looking for a power in all areas. If you're looking for a mate, you're looking for a mate. Every woman is looking for a mate that's got all those powers, and every man's looking for that too. The stereotype man that he's looking for just a voluptuous woman is not true. I've proven that in my seminars week after week in Breakthrough. A man is looking for all seven powers in life just like the woman is. And so if you have those to offer, you are sexually attractive and you're interested in having a mating with this person. So sexuality is not just physical, it's all those variables. Because I can take somebody that I've done it in the Breakthrough program for fun, just for fun, and picking on people, and other programs I've done it, where people have this really strong infatuation. And then I will make up some stuff about the person that they, just for fun, to see it, and crack their fantasy all of a sudden. And then all of a sudden they go cold on them. And they thought they had chemistry for them, but chemistry is perceptually stimulated. If you perceive more support than challenge, you get dopamine, oxytocin, vasopressin, encephalins, endorphins, estrogen, serotonin, which makes you think, oh, I want the picket fence, I want the babies, this is what I want to do. And if you get enough challenge, you start getting testosterone and histamine and cortisol and norepinephrine and epinephrine and the compounds of substance P for pain. You get those compounds. Your chemistry is all over the place based on what you're perceiving at any moment. And so the chemistry of a relationship is not fixed. It's a moving target based on your perceptions. But if you're temporarily holding on to a fantasy about what they're going to do, your chemistry is going to make you think, oh, this is the one. And then if you get grounded in reality, you may find out that it's not the same chemistry, and your sexual intimacy all of a sudden goes blank. So I can take a person who has not had intimacy or desire, and I can stack up the benefits and the things that support their values and make the chemistry come alive. And I can take somebody that's highly passionate and wanting to make love multiple times a day, or the high libido and everything else, and I can point out some things and crash it, make it where I don't even want to touch the person. It's all perception. You got to realize that the brain and perceptual extensions and the senses is really the sexual organs. It's not just the reproductive organs. They're responding to perceptions in the brain. So your brain and your sensory perceptions are, and the beliefs that you have and the unrealistic expectation, you have all those to go together for sexual intimacy. And if you know, if you understand human behavior, like I explained in the Breakthrough experience or in my Prophecy One experience, if I really explain that to you and you have those understood, man, it is a huge load off your back, because you will destroy a lot of unrealistic expectations and crack those myths. There's about 15 common myths that people live in, and they just completely undermine relationship dynamics. And so I when I crack those, it helps them appreciate in the Breakthrough experience the person that they're with, or the, and it sets.
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track, and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at The Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life-transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now let's continue with this episode.
More realistic expectation on the next relationship they're developing.
And that's, we can see that as evidence all over the world, that, you know, divorce rates, people live in fantasies, married, like you said, the five mic syndrome. I think that's a perfect name for it, the five mic syndrome.
I just read the stat the other day, 67% of all marriages within a 40-year period are divorced. That was a new stat that I just realized worldwide. I thought that was amazing. And, you know, I think if you really want to develop a long-term relationship, not everybody wants to. I mean, there are people that have all different expectations, but the ones that do, there's a science on how to assist that probability. But if you're dedicated to it, but they're not, you can't control it completely, but you can learn to fulfill them. Every individual is making decisions based on what they believe will give them the greatest advantage over disadvantage. If they believe that by being with you is more advantageous than disadvantage, they're going to want to be with you. And they're constantly comparing that out in the market. We don't want to admit it, but we're all comparing ourselves, who we're with, to the market. It's part of life. And if they, all of a sudden you see something that's a better package, if Hugh Jackman comes up to you and says, I want to be with you, and you've got Bubba at home, and he's got a belly sticking out and a shirt with holes in it and is farting and stuff, you're going to be open to Hugh Jackman coming by all of a sudden. You're vulnerable. So you want to understand that you are responsible for yourself in your own perceptions if you want to stabilize a relationship. And you're also responsible for learning how to communicate in their values. And because if they get more value out of being with you than anybody else, they're going to stay with you. So you can create that. It's just a matter of work. But don't think it's supposed to happen. I got a ring now, I don't have to do anything. I think that's unrealistic. Yep, there's work at it. When you get the relationship started, that's the beginning. That's not the end. That's the beginning of the relationship dynamics.
And we touched on long-term relationships, and leads nicely into the next question. Are you supposed to feel attracted to your long-term partner? I know a lot of people talk about rekindling or reigniting the spark, or they've sort of gone into a lull after being together for 40 years. Is that normal? And if it is, how do we handle that? Or how do we ignite the spark for people that do want to reignite that spark?
Well, I was just in a I'm not going to give away, they'll be listening probably, but I was just in a recent city just a few weeks ago with a gentleman who's been married, I think 39 years. And I don't know, I've talked to him and his wife, and they're pretty sexually active, I think daily. And I can't say that I'm by any means that way because of my dynamic, but you know, sexually active for 39 years is, you know, something unique. I can't say everybody has that. But what they are they both very knowledgeable on human behavior. They're very skilled, and they are spontaneously great communicators. And they do have an integrity factor. They know that in the long run, having integrity in the relationship and being themselves and being okay with being themselves and discussing through that is important. And they have so there are people out there that have incredible intimacy that's pretty steady. Most people, like waves, have fluctuations. There's stormy times, and there's times when it's smooth sailing, and sometimes when it's close intimacy, and other times a little distant. Sometimes their sexual energy goes into their business, or into their kids, or into their social interactions, or their spirituality, or into their physical fitness. So sometimes your libido and your sexual energy goes in different areas. And if you can see that that's going to happen, and don't put false expectations on somebody, you may think, well, this is, it's a dry spell, and it resurfaces. I've seen two people when they came to me one time in a consult. They said, you know, we haven't had sex in like months. And I said, okay, where is your sexual energy gone? And they both looked at each other and they go, well, it hasn't. And I said, no, nothing's missing. It's in another form. What form's it in? And we looked a little deeper and we found out both of them were on their career paths. And they were very much socially networking to grow their careers. And they were doing a lot of their sexual energy, interacting and networking and engaging and selling and things of this nature. And they realized that when they were highly intimate, their businesses were bleh. They were not even focused on it. There was an income droppage, but their values had shifted. Now they had a higher value on business and finance. And so some of their energy went into those two areas temporarily. And when they saw that, they went, oh, there's nothing to fix. There's something to appreciate there. And then when they saw that it wasn't missing, it was in that form, they actually appreciated each other for allowing that space, which then brought them also to have a little bit more of a balance between the work and the finances and the socializing and their intimacy. But they thought they had a problem in their relationship. It wasn't. They were both focused on two different areas, and their sexual energy went there. And we know that sexual energy becomes sublimated in different areas. And so if you are, if you have a wall up against somebody, it can be shut down and repressed, and it can go into all kind of different areas. Males and females can go in different areas with it, sometimes fantasy, sometimes masturbation, sometimes all kind of areas. But sometimes it can go into work. So don't say where it's not. Go find out where it is. Look at what your values are, and you may find that your values have shifted. And there's, and it doesn't mean there's a problem with the relationship. It just means that you may want to now link those values together and reestablish intimacy in addition to the other areas.
I love the fact that the energy actually transforms and is never missing. And it actually, while you were saying that, it reminded me of, you know, my old kickboxing coach. He always used to say to me, you never have sex the night before a tournament, because that obviously that sexual energy, we needed it in the ring the night before. And I never quite got it until you put it that way now.
They did a study on sports figures, and I don't know, that was a sort of an Indian in a religious model that, you know, you're not supposed to procreate, but they did some studies on sports individuals, and they can still have sex the night before a big performance. The problem is, just don't stay up late and make sure they eat well. So I don't think that just because you've had sex, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't perform well. It just means that if you're focused and your mind is focused on another area and your sexual energy is there, it may not be focused in your intimacy. But I believe you can delegate and still have your sex life and still go out and do performance. I know many individuals that have high sex drives and they do incredible performances. So I think we had one time Tiger Woods, and I think when he ended up shutting that down, that was the end of his creativity and his work. And I don't think it was 16 girls. I think, you know, he had to have 18. You know, it's just part of it. But I think you can do both.
Well, I'm definitely giving my coach a call after this, because I missed a lot of opportunities then. Right. So the next question is to discuss the levels of empowerment in a relationship. What relates to successful, challenging, or even failed relationships? What are the levels of empowerment in a relationship?
Well, I've seen the whole gamut. As far as I know, I've seen in extremes. The most outrageous extreme in age I saw was a 72-year-old married to a 19-year-old. And I thought that was a wild one. And I met them, and I was actually inspired by them. I couldn't believe how well they got along. They were both anthropologists. She was a scholar and a genius in anthropology. He was the professor. And they connected on anthropology. And they just had a great relationship. I never would have imagined it. It looked like grandpa and granddaughter. I can't judge it. It was their uniqueness. They felt that they were meant to be. But normally, when there's an extreme variation, either in age or in finance, or in religion, or any of the seven areas of life, if there's extreme polarities in there, it just makes it more vulnerable. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means there's more engagement that has to be done. And I've seen the whole gamut. But typically, if you've got somebody that's, let's imagine that seven is the highest on the Richter scale that you can be in each of the seven areas of life. So spiritually, a seven would be a very aware spiritual awareness. Seven in mind would be a genius awareness. Seven in business would be a great leader in business. Seven in finance would be financial independence and wealth. Seven in family would be somebody extremely stable in the relationship. Seven in social would be a major influence in society. And seven in physical is a hot, kind of a super model looking individual, healthy and vital. And spirituality is a spiritually aware, as I said. If you're a seven in all areas, and you find somebody that maybe a seven in looks, but the rest of them are threes and fours, it doesn't mean it can't work, but you're probably going to have sort of an ancestral dynamic where one's really empowered and like an adult, so the other one is kind of a neophyte. And whoever's the underdog is usually the one that wants to hurry up and get married. I always say underdogs that are infatuated with overdogs typically want to tie the person down. They say things like falling in love, which means minimizing themselves to somebody that's on a pedestal, or ready to settle down. Any of those languages are minimizing self to somebody that they've got on a pedestal. And that usually means that the person that's the underdog usually is the more monogamy oriented. They're going to hold on to that person. And the person that's got the power, they don't feel like they got a match, and they're going to be keeping their eyes open in case there's somebody that's got more power to offer, more offering, because we're looking for the seven areas. So I recommend that in a relationship, you find somebody that are both, even as close as possible, a real match. You respect the person. You have more appreciation for the person. You're not looking up on them and minimizing yourself and sacrificing for them. I've seen people, meet people, get incredibly infatuated, put them on pedestals, stop doing what's important to them, sacrifice what their life is for this person, thinking they're more important. And they've got this special one. I found my soulmate. And then weeks or months later, they all of a sudden are resenting the person because they sacrificed their life. I want my life back. And they weren't themselves. If you have to be somebody other than yourself to be in the relationship right from the beginning, you know you've got some sort of imbalanced polarity there. And that's gonna have a price you pay. Doesn't mean it can't work. Doesn't mean it won't do the work that it takes to balance it. Because eventually it's going to strive for an equilibrium point, an androgyny between the two polarities there. But there may be more work involved. I've seen it happen. I've seen almost every extreme still work out. I've also seen extremes just burn out. So if it's too much boredom or too much burnout, you're probably going to say, the heck with this. I think I can do a better deal in the marketplace. But try to find somebody that's even in powers. Maybe they're 34 or 40 that are both that level. You know, I feel right now, and I'm in a relationship right now, a beautiful relationship, and I feel that we have a nice match. We have a nice balance. We're empowered in pretty well all areas, and there's a lot of respect for each other. And I think that really makes a difference in a relationship. And I think that that's obtainable. And there's no rush. There's no reason you have to rush in. You know, I know there's people that say, well, I got to hurry up and have my kids by a certain time. Okay. But it's not worth rushing into a relationship just to have a child, in my opinion. It's wiser to find somebody you love to be with, that you respect, that you're willing to have it. In chemistry, there's what they call ionic bonds and covalent bonds. Ionic bonds means that you have somebody that's dependent on the other person, and they're drawn magnetically to them, highly polarity. And then you have covalent bonds where you both are empowered and they're just sharing. And I think that's a much more empowered state, more fulfilling. And then you'll find out that testosterone tends to focus on mental development, career development, and financial development. And estrogen tends to focus on family and social and interaction and health and fitness. But we have the capacity to be sort of androgynous and be able to empower all of them. If we're empowered in all of them, we're going to look for somebody that's empowered in all of them. I think you and Debbie Jackman are good examples of that. I think my girlfriend and myself, Trish and I, are pretty well like that. But there's some that are very polarized, where the male's really, really male, and the female's really, really female, classic, you know, the 1940s classic view. You'll see that, and they depend on each other. And if something happened with one in the business and they left, and the other one is vulnerable. And that's not that it won't work, but you have to keep communicating each other's values to keep that working. It's a lot more work involved. And, socially undeveloped countries, you have usually more gender splits in what people do. And in higher development countries, more developed countries, you have more androgyny, where males and females do basically the same things, and they contribute on both levels, on all areas. So I think it's wise to empower as many areas of your life and be a great package to offer. And then find somebody that's also powered with you, and then have a match.
And John, you've got a formula for, you know, you mentioned balance between these powers. Could you just elaborate a little bit on the formula that you have for balancing these powers, and explain a little bit the exercise and how to interpret the results of that formula?
Well, I ask the person, and I get the male and the female, or male, or female, whatever the type of relationship it is. I get them to ask themselves, to give themselves an evaluation on a 1 to 7 scale in each of the seven areas, and go around the wheel. And so spiritually, what would you classify yourself? You know, super illuminated, or, you know, enlightened person, or really dull, less awakened. And they give them their own assessment, and they go a 1 to 7 level, and they put a wheel around that. And I've been doing that for over 30 something years. And then have the other mate do that. And then you do it on the other mate, and they do it on you. And then you compare those. And then you have a discussion about why And you then try to find a medium between those and take a look at what's going on there, where the strengths and weaknesses are, and what the expectations are, and have a discussion. I think that people who are mature can easily have a discussion and work through those distinctions. And because sometimes they both have unrealistic expectations, and I think that it's wise to have a conversation about it. But if you have somebody that's way, way more empowered than you, you'll pay a price trying to develop a relationship with them in most cases. I find that sometimes, you know, they're just fantasies that they're holding on to this. I had a woman that basically married a very, very wealthy gentleman, extremely wealthy gentleman. And she was just not in his league. Physically, she was attractive and she was beautiful. But the other areas, he just completely dominated, controlled, and it became literally an aggressive, you know, if you're not empowered in a bunch of areas, you're going to be dominated and controlled. And it became a controlling relationship till eventually he went out and found somebody else that was way more empowered. And that was her lesson. And so, you know, it's better, wiser to do what I call the DeMartini method. In the breakthrough experience, I show you how to own, because your powers have nothing to do really with what you do as much as your perception of what you do. And I had a woman in Calgary, Canada that was came to me in my relationship program I was teaching. And she said, Dr. DeMartini, what happens if you got a guy that just can't make a commitment? He just won't make a commitment. We've been together over a year and he just won't make a commitment. And I said, there is no such thing. A man is always committed to the fulfillment of his highest values. And for some reason, your man doesn't believe that you're fulfilling enough of those values. That's all it is. If you were all of a sudden empowered and he perceived it that way, he'd be there with you in a minute. As long as he felt that it was more advantageous to be with you than not be with you. And she goes, well, I don't know what you mean by that. I said, well, let's go and look. And I went around. And I said, are you the most spiritually aware person? She goes, well, not really. And I said, okay. So on a 1 to 7 scale, where did you put yourself? Maybe a 3 or 4. I said, are you the most ingenious person, the highest education, blue blood educated and high degree schools? No, I finished high school and I started college, but I stopped after a year. And this guy has, 2 doctorates. And I said, so are you business savvy? She goes, no, I work for somebody as an assistant. I said, are you financially independent? No, I'm in debt. Are you have a great relationship history? And no, I've been divorced twice. Are you socially connected and, have close friends with powerful people? And you go, not really. I live in a small town. I said, well, this guy has a lot to offer, and that's why you're enamored with him, and you're wanting to hurry up and tie him down. But he's not in a rush because he's not sure that you got the power, and that's because of your own perception. So I sat with her for 2 hours and helped her transform her perception. Because you will automatically devalue yourself when you compare yourself to other people and expect to excel in the 7 areas in their form. You'll only do it in your form. And that's what disempowerment is about. In the breakthrough experience, I explain how we actually disempower ourselves and how to re-empower it and how to have more to offer in the relationship to raise the standard and to have somebody not want to walk away from us because we have a lot to offer. And I did that with her, and I spent 2 hours with her, and she was all of a sudden not in a hurry to get married. She goes, well, I better, I've been in 2 marriages. I better back this off and make sure this is the right guy. I said, now you're talking. And because if you flee, they'll follow. If you follow, they'll flee. And she went to lunch after that, after 2 hours of work. And believe it or not, because she withdrew and got her power in her own perception, and because I gave him an exercise on how to appreciate what she did offer, he went out and got a beautiful ring for her. That was a mind-blowing change from that exercise. So in the breakthrough experience, I show you people how to empower their areas and how to link the values like we're talking about here. And it made a difference in her life, and she got the guy.
Wow, that's an incredible story. And, we've spoken a lot about interpersonal and intimate relationships. But like I said before, I've been married for 10 and an entrepreneur for 16. So a lot of the time I actually spend more time at work, more time with my colleagues than I do with my son or my wife. Can you give us any recommendation of how to create an inspired working relationship, whether it be our boss or our employees or colleagues or our staff, suppliers? Is there something, principles that we can put into practice in these types of relationships?
Well, I just did a presentation on that this morning, as I said, but no one goes to work for the sake of a company. They go to work to fulfill what their highest values are. And if they feel that the action steps that they take on a daily basis, the responsibilities that they're accountable for, can help them fulfill what they value most, they'll become engaged in their work. And when they're engaged, they don't need to be motivated. They don't need to be reminded. They don't need to be incentivized. They just are called to act because they're doing something that's meaningful to them. And when they do, they have a fulfilling relationship with their company. Now, the same thing occurs with all the employees or the customers or the boss or whoever else they're interacting with at work. If they can't see how the actions of the people around them are fulfilling their highest values, they're going to get their values challenged. They're going to get self-righteous. They're going to want to talk down to them. They're going to want to pressure those people to be different. And you undermine the relationships. So the question we asked earlier, how specifically is what their values are helping you fulfill what your values are? Because your values determine your actions. That helps. So going, if you have an employee that you're having difficulty with, or a boss, or a customer, or a client, or whatever, ask whatever that they're doing, how is it specifically helping you fulfill your values? See, you can be a victim of your history or master of your destiny by the questions you ask. In the Breakthrough Experience, I explain these questions. There's a bunch of questions that can change your life. And if you answer these questions, you see things along the way. And you can turn the same job into something you're grateful for and the same people into something you're grateful for. So it's not the people. Those are labels. It's how you see the people. You have the ability to change your perceptions, your decisions, and actions in life. That's what you have control over. In the Breakthrough Experience, I explain how to do all three of those. And it's based on the questions you ask. Because if you change the questions you ask, you will see different things in people that were unconscious and change your perception of them. And if you can see how that then serves your values by asking, how does it serve my values? Another question, you can turn somebody that you think is terrible. I do it every weekend in Breakthrough. We have people come in there that have major anger and resentment to people. And they walk out pussycats, appreciating and loving, sometimes call them up that night. And it had nothing to do with the person. It had everything to do with all how they perceived it and how they saw what it was doing and affecting their highest values. So there's a science to that. And whether it be at work or be at home or family, the same thing is applied. And learning that science, as I guarantee you, gives you a competitive advantage in this world.
Thank you, John. And before we open up, we're going to go into a live Q&A with the audience, and we're going to be opening up the floor for about 20 minutes. So get your questions ready. You can pop them into the chat bar on the right-hand side. They'll be marked by the DeMartini team, and we'll try and get through as many questions as we can. So try and get those questions through. Any questions about the Breakthrough Experience, which I'm going to be presenting to you in a little bit, about your relationships, or any questions you may have pertaining to the program, please feel free to pop them into the chat bar on the side. So I'd just like to, at this stage, quickly before we go into the sale and give you the offer, is just again highlight to the right-hand side of the chat bar, you'll see an offer will come up to the right to take advantage of the Breakthrough Experience. Now, the Breakthrough Experience is for a limited time over for this webinar and for participants only in this room. We're going to be giving away the Breakthrough Experience with an extra 10% off the current advertised price. So that's 10% off the current advertised price. Plus, when you sign up now, you're also going to get a free gift, which is valued at $400, which is Dr. DeMartini's online module, The Inspired Destiny. The Inspired Destiny itself has been an incredibly valuable tool to a lot of people. So if you want to attend the Breakthrough Experience, you'll see an offer come up to the right-hand side of your screen. Please click through on that. It'll take you through to a landing page where you'll see the appropriate flag for your country. So if you see Australia, you just click on Australia, Canada, America, the UK, and South Africa. The dates are there, and the DeMartini Institute and team are available and ready to take your order. So that's 10% off of the current sales price, plus a $400 extra additional bonus pack that you'll be able to get. John, I'd just like to, since it's your program and you've done 1,111 of these programs, just to hear from you in your own words, how would attending the Breakthrough Experience impact other areas of people's lives? In this context, we've spoken about relationships, but how would it influence their dreams, their desires for money, leadership, or business development?
Well, you know, it depends. When I do the Breakthrough Experience, which I've been doing for 29 years almost, the group, there's different ratios of different, the people make the group, and there are different people there with different breakthroughs. So some are very focused on relationship dynamics, some are into business dynamics, some are into wealth building dynamics, Some are into social causes. Some are into physical fitness and health. Some are into spirituality. Some are into intellectual pursuits and how to waken up genius. So as a result of that, attending the programs, I've tried my best on how to empower each of those areas. So and when it comes to business, I explain how a person is only committed to the highest values, as I said. So I show them how to prioritize their daily actions according to what they value most, how to delegate things, and how to liberate themselves from the burden of doing things that are uninspiring on a daily basis at work. You know, I research where I travel, teach. Everything else is delegated out, and that is, allows me to do what I love every day. And there's absolutely no reason why you can't do that. In the Breakthrough Experience, I show people how I've done it and what they can do to transition towards that objective. It may not happen overnight, but I show you exactly the steps on how to go and transition to that based on the questions. Every breakthrough is different because people have different questions, and we go to wherever the questions are needed. I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm in that breakthrough, but I just know that we'll cover all of them, but I'll put more emphasis on different ones based on the group and the culture. But we'll also deal with how to deal with relationships like we're talking about today. And we'll talk about wealth building because I explained to them that if they're not doing something they love and they're not inspired, their self-worth is going to be affected, and therefore their net worth is going to be affected. And if they're not caring and having a hierarchy of values, I show them how to change their values to move and empower any area they want. And I showed them how to link whatever they would like to those values. So they, I'm going to show them in the Breakthrough Experience how they can empower literally every one of the seven areas of life. I'm going to show you how to own the traits, the greats. So you can take people that you look up to and you go, wow, they've done an amazing job. And how to realize that nothing's missing in you. You have everything that you see in them. You wouldn't admire them if you didn't have it. You're just too humble to admit it because you're not honoring the form yours is in. And I show you how to empower all those seven areas and see all seven. In the process of doing that, we get to help people empower their business and help them empower in their relationships and their wealth and in their health. I show them how when you're not living by your highest values and you're more polarized in your physiology, how you create symptoms. I literally go through and explain how symptoms are created and what those symptoms might mean. And then I go in there and I show them how to get objective again and balanced and have resiliency and adaptability and use stress, not distress, and why we attract stresses in our life and what stress is and how to dissolve it and how to dissolve grief and how to dissolve. I mean, I'm going to show you how to take any form of stress you have and show you how to dissolve it. I'm going to show you how to take any emotions you have and how to dissolve them and turn them into thank you, I love you, and be inspired and grateful and certain and present again. So it depends on the group what I may face, but I'm going to do everything I can to empower all those because I want breakthrough to help them break through and go to new levels in their life. And so in business, it's going to be helpful. I'm going to show them specific action steps that help them become more effective in business, how to manage their time more effectively so they have time for their relationship and their business by delegating more at home and at work. And I'm going to show them also how to have more vitality and energy because when they're doing low priority things, they're going to be drained at the end of the day. And they're going to be, I always say that addictive behavior is a compensation for unfulfilled highest values. And a lot of them are going to end up overeating or drinking or doing things that go into a vicious cycle instead of empowering themselves. So the Breakthrough Experience is one of the most inspiring courses I get to share. I do it 43 times a year on average. And I've been doing it for 28, almost 29 years now. And I look forward to transforming people's lives. It's one of the most inspiring things. If people got to see, well, the people, some of you are out there, you know what I'm talking about. But if you haven't ever been to the Breakthrough Experience, if you got to see what I saw on a weekly basis, you know why I travel full-time 360 days a year doing what I do. Because it's inspiring watching lives change and watching people empower their lives and getting advantage. I ask people at the end of the Breakthrough Experience, how many of you learned something this weekend that you could have gone your whole life and never learned? And every hand goes up. And it's been consistent because I'm going to give them information. I'm a researcher. I've got original ideas and I want to share them with people. And I'm absolutely certain that they'll have a competitive advantage in the world and they'll learn how to be more effective in their relationships and empower their health and their business and finances. And there's no reason why you can't empower all areas. I'm absolutely certain. I've done it in my life. And I didn't start out that way. I was a street kid as a teenager and I lived under a bridge at one time and in a park bench at one time. So I know what it's like to have very little and I know what it's like to have a blessings that I have today. So I'm absolutely certain if you apply the principles that are in the Breakthrough Experience, it can change your life and you deserve it because you have a desire to make a difference and be authentic. And if you haven't been able to look in the mirror and say, thank you, I love you to yourself, and you're trying to get rid of part of yourself and you're banging your head against the wall, you may be not realizing that you're trying to live outside your values. And I'm going to show you how to reclaim your real self. You want to be able to say, thank you, I love you to yourself on a daily basis and to the people you care about.
That's brilliant. And just quickly for the audience, the special offer is to the right-hand side. That's 10% off the current early bird price, plus a free Inspired Destiny online course. And John, I see the questions have come through here and they're piled up for us and they're waiting for us and they're ready to go. But before I jump onto the audience questions, I do have a little selfish question of my own I'd like to squeeze in there, which I didn't actually touch on in the course of it. How important is our relationship with ourselves?
Well, if you can't look in the mirror, as I said a moment ago, and say, thank you, I love you to yourself, you're going to have a hard time demonstrating that also to others, because your self-image, you know, in the breakthrough experience, I explain
Hi, John, are you there? We seem to have lost.
And so there's exact, actual, specific questions and actions you can do that can take you from a point of not appreciating yourself and appreciating yourself. I mean, it is a science. And so if you have had struggles doing this and you're beating yourself up and you're thinking, you know, you got low self-esteem and somebody's labeled you and you've labeled yourself and everything else, you think you're sabotaged, you think, oh, I can't stay focused, what's wrong with me, and all that other crap. That's so far outdated compared to what I present in the breakthrough experience. I'm going to show you exactly what to do. Now, there'll be work involved, but if you apply it just exactly as I instruct, you're going to appreciate and love yourself. And there's no reason why you can't. And I have people every weekend in the breakthrough experience doing the method, the Demartini method, on themselves and having tears of gratitude for themselves and realizing, wow, I've been judging myself with unrealistic expectations. And I finally right now see how magnificent I am. And I tell people at the very beginning, you know, my objective this weekend is to help you see the magnificence of who you are. That's just one of the many objectives I intend for that program.
And the offer is to the right hand. Sorry, just clearing my throat there. I got a bit emotional. We have a question from Hussein. What if your values change over time for the betterment of yourself, as if you want to continuously improve and you're finding that your values serve you better and others don't have the same mindset? So his values are shifting.
Yes, every human being's values are evolving. And they either evolve gradually, tweaking it, or cataclysmically by major events. And when you live more congruently by your highest values, you have gradual tweaking, resilient changes in values based on the environment that you're in. And when you are not living by your highest values, you usually are more rigid, more black and white, and therefore it takes a cataclysmic event to make a shift. But you still shift, but it takes cataclysms to do it. So you are going to have shifts on that. That's why I encourage people in the breakthrough experience or in life to go and do the Demartini value determination process quarterly. And I advise, if you do it quarterly and keep an updated version of it, the beauty about our website is that you can do this and you can keep a list of all the back quarter by quarter. You can see the evolution of your values and see which ones are stabilized and which ones are fluctuating. If you do the honest evaluation, you can see what's happening. And the hierarchy of your values dictates your destiny, is determining how you perceive the world, make decisions in the world, and act in the world. So you can literally watch those values change, and you have a number of choices. Either set goals that match the new values, that's realistic, or you can shift to values. I have people that have never been able to make money, keep money, or accumulate money in their life. And I show them exactly what to do, and I actually help them shift their values right there in the breakthrough experience. And all of a sudden, their trajectory changes. Now they're able to see opportunities and save and invest. And it's like their mind shifted because their values shifted. So you either got to learn how to change your values to match your goals, or change your goals to match your values. But there has to be congruence if you want fulfillment. And so, yes, as your values are changing, you're looking for a pattern and you're looking for what's truly important, not what you think it is, but what objectively it shows, and make sure you're setting goals and adapting goals accordingly. I've had a dream to travel the world and teach since I was 17. That hasn't changed. But what I'm teaching has. and where I'm getting to teach has evolved, but and who I get to teach has evolved. But the core value of wanting to research, learn, and teach and travel the world has been with me for 45 years. So you could say I'm stubborn, or you could say that I'm just clear about what it is that I love doing most. But I do what I love. I've structured my life to where I can do something that's inspiring to me. And so many people have Monday morning blues, Wednesday hump days, thank God it's Fridays, week friggin' ends, and they have a schizophrenic life, and they make money doing something they're not inspired by so they can escape it and blow the money on a vacation to escape or get on a break at work, and then they go have to do the same thing and they have a schizophrenic life. Their vocation, vacation have no correlation. I believe that you can have those the same. You're doing something you love to do. It's like a vacation.
Fantastic. We've got another question from Shelley. If you are with someone who is physically or verbally abusive or whose highest value is addiction, is it wise to link to their values, or how do you know when it is time to leave?
If you have to ask the question, it's not quite time. Still lessons they are teaching you. But what I would first do, abuse is a term when we have had an event occur that we see the drawbacks to without the benefits. And I don't, in the breakthrough experience, I shatter the labels of abuse. And because it's ultimately, it's a lesson to get us to be empowered. Any area of our life we're not empowered in, we're going to attract people to control us and dominate us and sometimes be violent to us to get us to empower those areas. And if you're overprotected and oversupported and overnurtured and overbabied and everything else, you're going to get the bully, as they say. So you want to first go in there and do the DeMartini method on this person and make sure you have a real evaluation and not just a label. That's the first thing. You want to make sure you get facts, not fictions, because we can subjectively bias things. I have people come in the breakthrough experience and says, my husband's always yelling at me. He's always abusive to me. And I go, really, always? 24 hours a day? Do you sleep 8 hours a day? He's at work another 8 hours a day, so you're seeing him really an hour and a half a day, and he sometimes yells at you? Let's get real about it. We want to get factual. Once we get factual, not subjectively biased into fiction, then we can go from that point and we can use the DeMartini method to dissolve some of the conflict between the person. We can then find out what their values are and learn to communicate in their values, which softens them and gets them back into their highest value, less into the amygdala where addictive behaviors are compounded. When people, addiction is a compensation for unfulfilled highest values. If we're not helping them fulfill their highest values and they're not able to fulfill their highest values, that's the first place to start instead of labeling them. Now, I would do that first for you. I always say fire up the relationship before firing it out. But if the person was an alcoholic and has been an alcoholic and then drinks all day long and was that way before you met them and they're that way all the time they're doing and they're self-depreciating and they're not asking for help and they're resisting help and you've tried, then you ask yourself, is this worth it? It's your life. You know, there's no rules here that says you have to be with that person forever. There's no rules. But first, you want to make sure that you're not creating that in your own life for your own lessons, because that's what's usually there. But sometimes you selected somebody and you had a fantasy and you were maybe a naive and you had this expectation you're going to fix them or change them or whatever. You got to love them for who they are, or to say, thank you very much. You've taught me so much. I appreciate what you've done for me. I'm going to move on now. But if you're trapped, if you're sitting there and they're beating on you every single day and you're trapped because you don't have a lot of education, you don't have a career that you can go and do your own business with, and you don't have a way of having an income, and you're socially isolatable, you're trapped with kids at home, and you're disempowered and you're dependent on the person, then you're only there because you still believe there's still more advantage or disadvantage there, or you would have left a long time ago. So if you have to ask the question, there's still things I would recommend doing. But once you're clear, it's time to move on. You won't do it out of retaliation or anger. You'll do it because you've completed the what it's there to teach you. All relationships are to teach you how to learn to love a part of yourself that you maybe had difficulty loving.
Great. We got the next question is from Cool. What does it mean when my girlfriend is very capricious most of the time or fickle, inconsistent? How does this benefit me? I had to look that word up.
Well, the first thing I would do is look in the mirror and make sure you don't look like Spock. Because if you're extremely rational, an engineer type that doesn't have a lot of the emotive states, you're probably going to get a Bette Midler, emotional type that's going to be there. That's you know, if you're really goal oriented and really rigid and really focused and this, you're going to get somebody that's kind of playful to get loosen you up a bit. These complementary opposites tend to attract each other. So first look and make sure that they're not complementary opposite of you, to make sure that you're here to learn a little of what they have to say and let them teach you a little bit about it's a two-way street, in other words. That's the first thing. I would then do the DeMartini method I explained in the breakthrough experience on each other and find out where you have your form of fickleness, because whatever you see in other people, you have. It's just in another form. And make sure you're not in your rigid polarity of one side having to have the other side to soften you up and get you into a kind of an androgynous balance. But I would do the DeMartini method on them. And then I would make some linking of values. And because if you can see how it serves you, you can have some fun using her fickleness. That does not necessarily mean it's a bad trait. Every trait has two sides. If you see it only as a bad trait, you're not looking at the upsides. And if you see it only as a good trait, you're not looking at the downsides. See both sides of a trait and you can manage it. Anything that you're infatuated with or resent runs you. Anything you have a balanced orientation on, you get to run. You can manage it. Your executive center is a self-governing center. Your amygdala is a polarizing center.
Great. We've got a next question here from Rian. How can I help a possible new partner come out of her fantasy? She believes strongly that every bad thing that happened to her or is currently happening to her is her fault. Because of this is holding her because he is holding her accountable, so she is living in a huge guilt trip.
Well, guilt is an assumption that you, with your motor actions, have initiated a reaction that you're blaming yourself for, that's caused more pain and pleasure, more loss and gain, more negative than positive somebody. In fact, it doesn't exist. Every weekend in the breakthrough experience, I have people that are carrying around shame and guilt or pride and self-righteousness. And I have a series of questions that just flatten it, neutralize it. And all of a sudden they go, I've been carrying around shame and guilt for years over something. I said, well, that's because you didn't know how to ask the right questions. I'm teaching a new set of questions to see things from new eyes. And the same thing as infatuation. When you're infatuated, you're blind to the downsides. So if you don't ask the question, what are the downsides? You're going to be caught in infatuation. And if you're guilt, you're blind to the upsides of what you did. And so I make you look for those and find out how it serves. We've all had an experience that we think someone's in the past done something we thought was terrible. Oh, it's terrible. In a day, a week, a month, a year, or 5 years later, we look back and go, oh, thank God that occurred. I can't believe I didn't see it initially, but boy, that was a turning point in my life. But why have the wisdom of the ages with the aging process? You can have the wisdom of the ages without it by asking the right questions and seeing both sides of it now. I'm absolutely certain that if she does the DeMartini method on herself, on every one of those things she's feeling guilty about, that's dissolvable in a matter of hours. And if she needs help on that, she can come to the breakthrough experience, and I assure you that will be a life-changing turning point, because there's absolutely nothing. There's nothing that your mortal body can experience that your immortal soul, the state of unconditional love inside you, can't love. And there's no reason why you can't look in the mirror and say thank you. And I've seen, I had a woman that was driving down the highway. I was doing the breakthrough experience in Dallas, Texas, and there was a social working therapist there. And she gets a call from one of her clients, and the client is screaming on the phone. He's trying to shoot me. He's trying to kill me. He's chasing me down the freeway and shooting at my car. There's this violent response. And she said, well, you know, she came to me. What do I do? And I said, if she can escape, call 911 for one. And if you can escape, try to get over to the Westin Hotel where I am, and I will sit down at the end of the program and I'll clear what's going on here. Well, she did. She dodged him through the streets and got away from him and finally came over to the Westin Hotel in Dallas. And I sat with her from 6 p.m. throughout the night and into the morning, clearing every single thing she was feeling guilty about and shamed about. She was raised as a Catholic, and there's a lot of guilt trips put on her from some of her religious ideologies. And she was beating herself up because of, oh, God, tons of stuff. Affairs she's had, relationships, child that were out of wedlock, abortions. I mean, she was just everything that you're going to go to hell for. She had done them all. And so she was beating herself up and didn't feel worthy of having a guy that was respectful. And so she picked up a guy that was, she thought she was worth. And she was devaluing herself and really wanting to kill a part of herself. And we've sat down and neutralized them all with the DeMartini method. It took us hours, but that guy was calling in on her cell phone like every 20 minutes, calling in and trying to get her, find out where she was. And we worked all the way into the morning. We cleared every one of those guilts doing the method. And he finally called and I picked up the phone and he says, I almost tried to kill my wife today. I need help. He wanted help. And I said, well, you're not going to see your wife right now until you go and clear your stuff. So we went and sent her out to work with him. And I worked with this lady and they kept distant until they both worked through all of their shames and guilts and their unrealistic expectations. And then they were able to communicate back again, change the dynamic. I've seen people that have been beaten and multiple relationships beaten over and over again in the breakthrough experience, clear it. That was the end of it. 14 years later, never a beating again. Because no one beats us up as much as we beat ourselves up. So there's no reason that she has to be carrying around shame and guilt with a tool that we have today. So come to the breakthrough experience. You'll say thank you. You'll have a life change.
Right. So I'm going to quickly jump onto another question here from Katie. I am alone for 10 years now. How can I find my mate?
What I'm going to say is going to probably shock some people, but I'm absolutely certain it's worth the time spent. First, make a list of everything you're looking for in a mate, an exhaustive list of everything you think you want, everything, and just an exhaustive list. Then right next to it, in another column, write down who in your life right now is providing that. And I have been doing this for many, many years. And even though you're going to want to resist answering this question, you're going to say, nobody, 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 you're going to look and you're going to find out there are people in your life, friends or extended family members or somebody in your life that are actually providing you everything you're looking for. And then after that, make a list of every opposite trait that you just desired. Because the truth is the soulmate is going to give you both sides. They're going to support and challenge you. They're going to be nice and mean. They're going to be considerate and inconsiderate. They're going to be both-sided. And if you're really ready for a real relationship, you got to embrace both of them because you're not going to get a one-sided relationship. That's childish fantasy. And then go find out who's providing those. And if you do the exercise, Shirley, and I've done this, God, thousands of times, if you do this exercise, you'll find out that nothing's missing. And then you'll discover that your values have led you to having everything you're looking for in the diversified form, not in one individual. And the reason why you have it diversified is because in previous relationships, you've accumulated so much pain that you unconsciously are trying to avoid the challenges you face by being with one, even though you're claiming, oh, I want to find my mate, I want to do it. Unconsciously, you're trying to avoid being with one because of the pains associated with it. So you've diversified all the things you're looking for in a variety of people to keep you safe. So you can go home at night. You don't have to be trapped. You don't have to be controlled. You don't have to sit there and do and sacrifice for somebody. You don't have to worry about them having an affair. You don't have to worry about them always being or working too much or whatever you've had wounds in, that your avoidance of those wounds have made you diversify the mate in all those forms. And then what I do is I then have you go back and do the DeMartini method on each one of those previous relationships until there's nothing in there that you can't say thank you for. So you liberate yourself from the avoidance, the dissociation from that to make you have to diversify it into a variety of people. And the moment you clear that and you see that you're empowered already, you're not desperately looking for somebody. You realize you've got everything. You've been manifesting it all along. And now you're receptive to having it back in one. In most cases, it's within 3 weeks a new relationship's appeared. That's on the average. That's about the length of time it is. And we just did another one the other day, and it's already happened. So I see this quite regularly. So we unconsciously make sure we don't have a relationship, even though we claim. It's like when I ask people how many want to be financially independent, everybody puts their hands up. But when I look carefully at their actions, they want immediate gratification, buying consumables and depreciables. They don't want to put their money into long-term asset accumulation. They want quick fix. And so the same thing in relationships. What people say is not what I go by. I go by what their actions are, and then I go and help them wake up to what their real values are because their values are creating their reality.
Great. So I've got the question here is from Bree. How important is trust in a relationship? Is there a way of being able to rebuild or regain trust after a betrayal?
There is no such thing as betrayal. I want to crack that fantasy. I break that every weekend in Breakthrough. Nobody betrays you. You betray you. I want everybody to hear that really loud because that's going to make you really angry when you hear that because you really think that they did this to you. You want to be the victim. They did this to you. But the truth is nobody is trustworthy except for them to fulfill what they value most. Got to get that. They're only committed to the fulfillment of their highest value. Now, when they were infatuated with you and they said, oh, now I'm now going to be committed to you, the real truth is that's their own illusion. They're committed to the fulfillment of their highest value. If for some reason they do not feel that their values are being met, their natural inclination is to open the door for somebody who might help them fulfill a value or a series of values that are not being met. So the question you want to ask, please get this, it's really important because I see this every week. If you were to go to Kmart or a department store, a grocery store, and you were to go there for 10 years, and a new competitor opened up and was selling the same groceries for 20% less, and it was a block away and they didn't have to get in the car to go get it, and they delivered it. Are you going to stay with that same store or are you going to move to the new store? And the probability is you'll probably go to where it's helping you fulfill your values more effectively. Okay, you're a customer. Your mate is a customer. If they don't feel their values are being met, they're going to go somewhere else. So that's not betrayal, that's human behavior. You understand, don't hold on to fantasies about what people are supposed to do. Get understanding of how people actually function. That's a big wake-up call to people. Because I see this word cheating and betrayal and all this stuff. It's very childish and very victim. It's a psychology victim mentality. I break it every week in a break. So if you think that's what's happened, come to the break, and I'll show you how to break that. So that's, I want to empower you, so that's not the place you're coming from. Otherwise, you're going to be wounded, and you're going to be running the store, and you're going to track the same people because you didn't get your lesson. You didn't get to find out what role you played in there. No therapy is ever complete to cause and effect equals the same in space-time. You got to see the dynamic you're playing in. You're not a victim of their doing it. It's a dynamic between the two people that their values aren't being met. And sometimes you've had an affair with your kids or an affair with your health or an affair with your schooling or an affair with your own family. There's other things you may have been focused on and not the mate. And anything you're not willing to do with your mate, you're going to have to face the delegate. So break through that idea. Come to breaks and I'll show you what to do with that. And I'll show you that, not have to be a victim again, because you can only trust somebody to fulfill what their highest values are. They're not going to live in your values, and they're not going to live by your social idealisms, and they're not going to live by even things they said they're going to do, because you don't even always do everything you say you're going to do. They're going to make decisions based on what their values are at that moment. And that's what you have to understand. I wish I had more time for that, but our time has run out. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to share something on relationships tonight. I'm sure it shocked some of you, but also hope to inspire others. And if there's anything I can do, is I can really help you if you come to the Breakthrough Experience. I can shatter a lot of myths and get you grounded, because the way things are more magnificent than the fantasies we keep imposing on it.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dr. DeMartini Show. To determine and discover your values, head over to drdemartini.com, where you will also find blogs, videos, research materials, online courses, and exactly how you can sign up to become part of the Breakthrough Experience in your local city. Thanks for tuning in. If you would love to follow Dr. DeMartini on any of his social media platforms, you can do so.